Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/book-versus-movie. There are over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Thanks so much.
It's the hat. Don't look in an obvious way, okay?
It's Mark Forman.
Is he single?
He's famous for it.
I don't believe in marriage.
Neither do I.
The minute you get married, you start to drive each other crazy.
For 20 years, he's been terrible to women.
You're the only person he's ever treated decently.
To marriage. We're having a baby.
Ooh, baby.
It's just that there's no door to the kitchen.
The back door.
Oh, the back door. We know it's a kitchen. But you can't get inside the house from in the kitchen!
It's not funny.
Yes, it is.
I never expected to love it so much.
Is you is or is you ain't my baby.
Just keep breathing, you can do it.
I don't want to do it, honey. Can't we get somebody else to do it?
Thelma Rice is having an affair.
Yeah, with whom?
I don't know.
I found out who Thelma Rice is having the affair with.
How to tell if your husband's cheating. What's the first clue?
It may be a slip of paper you found in his wallet.
I know about you and Thelma Rice.
You want monogamy? Marry a swan. Betty told her that you said she had herpes.
You tell Thelma she comes over here one more time, I'll tell Betty she has the clap.
You'll just go back to him and you'll hold it against
him. I am never going back with him, never.
But I'll try, by God, I'll try.
Your mother would have loved him.
Yeah, but she was crazy.
I know nothing stays the same, but if you're willing to play the game, it's coming around again.
Hello, and welcome to Book Versus Movie. This is a podcast where we read books that have been adapted into movies, and then we try to decide which we like better, the book or the movie. I am Margot P. of ColoniaBook.com, and this is my good friend and co-host, Margot D. of Brooklyn Fit Chick.
Hi, everyone.
I'm very excited to talk about this book and movie.
Yay! It's going to be so great.
We were just saying before we got on the air, I was up very late watching this film again. And I even though I know what happens.
Yeah.
I can't look away or fast forward or anything because I'm going to miss this line or that gag or, okay. But before we get to that, yes, this is a podcast where we read books and then we watch the movies that are adapted from them. But as we've been in this strange pandemic era, we've been doing a brand new episode every single week. And so a lot of times that means we'll do a shorter literary source. Today we're doing a book, but sometimes we'll do something shorter like an article or a novella or even a song. And
plays.
We love listener suggestions. And so if you are bubbling with ideas for books or movies or other literary sources that have been adapted that you would like to share with us, there's a few places where you can do that on the internet.
Yes, we do have a basic Facebook page. We don't really check it that often, but all the episodes are posted there and be sure to like it. But we do have a private Facebook group if you want to interact with us and other fans of the show. People offer ideas there. We talk about books and movies. We go deep dive into the episodes and sometimes we throw a lot of clips up there and things like that. So that's Book vs. Movie Podcast Group in Facebook. On Twitter and Instagram, you spell out Book versus a Movie. Both places are great places to reach us. And also, we'd really love it if you check out our Instagram page and like it. And we have a basic old-timey email. It's book versus movie podcast, spelled it all out, at gmail.com. We do have stickers and bookmarks and all kinds of things if you are looking for that. Or you just have suggestions and you want to send it there. You're old-fashioned. You just want to send an email. That's the way you do it. So it's book versus movie podcast at gmail.com.
Yeah, we like those too. Mm-hmm. We like an old email. We were also saying before we came on the air that this is a rare occasion where you and I both listened to the audiobook.
Yes, we do have a promotion with Audible. This was one of my favorites. I actually got two Audible books this week because of this episode. But you go to audibletrial.com/book versus movie and you can get a free month to check out their service. So you get one every month. It's a subscription service. This episode, I would totally recommend Heartburn, read by Meryl Streep. Wow. It's just...
Same. It's one of the best audiobooks I've ever heard. I had to drive up to Los Angeles for work this week. And it was one of those days where like the traffic was bumper to bumper from my house to Los Angeles, like the entire way. It took freaking ever. And I would have been swearing and maybe even crying in the traffic. But I put this audiobook on and I was laughing hysterically. It's so, I mean, it's heartbreaking, of course. It's a very Smith.
It's Meryl Streep acting.
It's a super sad story. Yeah. But it's Meryl Streep, Nora Ephron's, you know, writing, which we'll get into. And I mean, I was laughing out loud in my car the entire way up and the entire way back.
It's pretty spectacular. And also there's another book I want to recommend that we'll talk about during the show. It's Mike Nichols' A Life. He directed this movie that we're talking about today. He also directed The Graduate, which Margo and I talked about a while ago. He's directed many, many things. I'm reading his biography right now. What a life he's had. Mark Harris is the author in that book, and it's excellent as well. Oh, and Margo, I forgot to mention, we have a new Patreon member. Her name is Jenny.
Wow. Thanks, Jenny.
Yeah, we put all of our episodes from 2019 and previous up on a Patreon wall. Just have a couple of affordable options for you if you want to check it out. Also, a few things there are free. Just check it out just for that. But if money's tight and you want to know how you can help out the show, just tell a friend about the show or ask us to send you a sticker and put it on your laptop so other people see it, and then tell them about the show. Thank you so much, Jenny. We really appreciate it.
So as Margo said, we are going to be talking about Nora Ephron's Heartburn, which was adapted by Nora Ephron for the screen, directed by Mike Nichols. Many of the people that we're going to be talking about today are people that we've talked about before on previous episodes here and there, including Mike Nichols, but we have never talked about Nora Ephron. How have we never talked about Nora Ephron?
You know what?
What?
Well, no. You know what? We did actually a bit. And this is when we did Julie and Julia.
Oh, that's right. I forgot we did that movie. That was a long time ago.
That was a long time ago. That's behind the Patreon wall, by the way. But we didn't go as deep into it because this is Nora's story. I mean, it's a fictionalized version of her story. But this is truly Nora Ephron. And there's also a documentary on HBO that you and I both streamed and watched about Nora Ephron. It was directed by her son, Jacob Bernstein, who used to write for Women's Wear Daily. And I used to pitch to him all the time because he was the media writer and I worked in magazines.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he used to be like, wow.
Yeah, he's a great journalist in his own right. This documentary is such a great look at his mother. And I really like all the angles that he got. Can't recommend the documentary enough. It is called Everything is Copy.
Thank you.
It's very easy to find. That's something that Nora's mother used to say to her whenever she went to her mom, which is great, like in print, looks fabulous and is funny. But like when you're a daughter looking for some nurturing because your life is falling apart, maybe not the most helpful advice on earth.
Yeah. Should we start talking about Nora?
Yes.
Okay. She was born May 19th, 1941 in New York City. Both of her parents were screenwriters. They moved to LA in the 50s in Beverly Hills, and they wrote some amazing scripts out there. Nora had a few sisters. They're all writers. Her mother was the kind of person that said everything is copy. If something happened to one of the kids, it would wind up in a script somewhere. And Nora, I'm sorry, Margo, she's like swatting at a fly as I'm talking.
I'm so sorry. It's super humid in San Diego because global warming.
Same
and we didn't used to have the humidity. And I am like plagued by mosquitoes.
Oh, no.
There is a mosquito in this room that been biting the crap out of me.
Oh,
and
no.
It keeps like flying past my eyes, my eye line, and I keep missing it.
Oh, goodness.
Sorry.
No worries. Nora goes to college. She goes to college on the East Coast. She wants to be a writer. First, she tries to work at Newsweek magazine, but Newsweek didn't hire women writers at the time. She's first worked for President Kennedy, and then she went to Newsweek, tried to get a job there. They wouldn't hire her, so she was part of a class action lawsuit. She does eventually work for, let's just like quickly go, so she works for the New York Post, loved it. She said she felt guilty because she had so much fun writing about such terrible things. And she meets Carl Bernstein in the mid-70s. They'd both been married before. He was talked about him.
Wait a minute.
Am I wrong already?
Already. So we talked about Carl Bernstein, just FYI. We talked about Carl Bernstein kind of at length when we did All the President's Men earlier this year. So it should be, you might be able to still find that in your various podcast
feeds.
Providers. Yeah, feeds. One of the things that we discussed, if you listen to that episode, is that Carl Bernstein, I mean, nobody's arguing his journalistic chops. Right. Yes. He's a brilliant writer. That book is awesome. Mm-hmm. I loved it. I recommend it to everybody. It's still relevant. It's great. But one of the hilarious things about All the President's Men is it's Woodward and Bernstein both writing it. And in what is clearly Bernstein's voice, there are a number of passages about how Bernstein is irresistible to the ladies. They just can't get enough of that Bernstein. When Nora meets him, you know, she's like a badass lady journalist, like breaking glass ceilings and blazing trails and stuff. And he had been dating a friend of hers. That was kind of how she met him. So she knew a little bit about his reputation. He was not quiet about that, obviously. Like, he goes on about it in All the President's Men. Like whenever there was a lady, a tight-mouthed lady witness to crack, send in the old charmer, send him in. It's Bernstein's time to shine. So she knew that about him. I loved, this was probably the part that I found most interesting about the documentary was this whole story about like how they met in that whole world.
She was a writer for Esquire after that. She was an essayist and she was very popular. She was very, very funny and she knew all the big media people in New York City at the time. He was based in Washington, D.C. That's his beat. They fall very much in love. She moves to D.C. to be with him. They get married in 1976 and she hates it in D.C. She doesn't like the phoniness of it. Politics are kind of boring to her. Oh, by the way, I should mention she was a food writer as well. And she was a great cook. They get married. She writes some screenplays, one of them being Silkwood for Mike Nichols.
Yeah. No slouch.
No slouch.
No. Oh, OK. I'm going to just bring up this documentary all the time because.
Yes.
Like, I was saying to Margo, I was texting her every time Carl Bernstein appears in this documentary. And mind you, it's a documentary being produced by his son. He's in conversation with his son. Every time that man opens his mouth, my opinion of him sinks ever lower. And the first thing he says about Nora Ephron, again, groundbreaking lady journalist. He's like, I don't know anything about her work. What? It's going to be a lot of that, guys. I'm sorry.
Yeah, he's a product of his time. He's someone who's kind of a male chauvinist, and that's a lot of them were that generation. He has that swagger and that confidence about him. They get married. They have their first child, Jacob, and then she becomes pregnant, and she finds out that he's having an affair with a former prime minister's wife, right?
Or daughter? Is she? I forget.
Yeah, Margaret J. She was the daughter of former British Prime Minister James Callaghan. She's pregnant when he does this. And she finds out because she sees receipts and things like that. And so she leaves and she goes to New York. And then he goes and gets her and brings her back.
Yes. In real life, there's a lot of stuff that is, we're talking about her life now. We're not talking about the book, but there's mm-hmm. a lot of stuff that's in the book that is lifted directly from the life and a lot of stuff that she fictionalized mm-hmm. for comedic effect. But if I remember correctly, in real life, she goes back and she takes the kids and she's living with her editor, right? Mm-hmm.
She goes back and then Carl comes back. I guess he says he's sorry. He never really states it. And then they try again. And then he continues his philandering. And so pretty soon, either right after the baby's born, right after the baby's born is when she leaves him, goes back to New York, broke, by the way, had no money.
Yeah. And no money, no prospects. I mean, this is not long after, you know, women needed a man to co-sign to buy a car or get it, you know, get an apartment and stuff. Yeah. And she was somebody who was in a place of privilege compared to a lot of other women in that situation. And still.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was struggling.
Really nothing. Yeah.
Well, I forgot to mention also both of her parents had died of alcoholism. They had both.
Yes.
Which affected her greatly.
Yeah. So she was the oldest. Mm-hmm. I thought that was very interesting too. Her sisters talking about basically that they were kind of jealous of Nora, that Nora basically had the most time with their parents before, you know, they really succumbed to their alcoholism. Mm-hmm. Her father, I thought this was kind of interesting. Her father's second wife, so their stepmother, was the widow of Oscar Levant, who was very, very famous humorist. I mean, witty. If you've ever seen An American in Paris, he's a pianist, an extremely gifted pianist. He's so witty and so talented, this man, but also plagued by depression and things like that. But anyway, what I'm saying is it was a very snappy literary kind of a household.
They're all very bright. And there wasn't a lot of encouragement to go around. They were kind of raised to be, to take care of themselves, to pull themselves up. But my favorite story is Barry Diller. Is that who it was? He went to high school with her, Beverly Hills High School. And they were on the school newspaper and she fired him. And she didn't remember firing him. And that's the first time I've been fired. He was like 16.
It's such a great documentary,
it
y'all.
Really is.
I mean, and I've been watching lots of interviews and she's, yeah, I mean, her parents, both of her parents and then her subsequent, you know, stepmother, they're all like super witty, you know, kind of, you have to keep up with the zingers that are going all over the place. Mm-hmm. And it kind of, I got the impression from the sisters that, I'm wondering if you got this too, they didn't say this outright, but I kind of got the impression that wit and words was the way that the things that they would get rewarded for from their parents. Like that was the approval machine with the parents, is like that's how you could impress them and get their approval and get their attention, was being witty and coming up with the best zinger the quickest at the dinner table.
Yeah. Her sister Delia said after Nora's death that Nora wasn't very sensitive. She wasn't the person you would go to with a problem. But she was kind of a fixer. You know, she was a very pragmatic person. And that, you know, she appealed to her parents because she was so, you know, kind of boss. She was like what Tina Fey would say, like bossy pants. She owned her space and she just did her own thing. And I'm sure that's what Carl Bernstein was attracted to, what you're attracted to in a person. And then all of a sudden, like, hey, she's not my biggest fan anymore. Like, or she, you know, maybe that's, I don't know. I don't know what goes through Carl Bernstein's head.
Nor do I. And we'll get to, I mean, again.
Oh gosh, yeah. I know. It's hard.
It's just him. He's doing it all. It's not other people. And people in the documentary, I just want to be real clear, because we're going to talk about this a lot with Carl Bernstein. I guess we have a very fragile ego. Nobody else in the documentary said anything bad about Carl Bernstein.
No.
Really. You know, I mean, they acknowledge like the facts of what happened. But nobody said like, oh, he was such a jerk, or he was so insensitive, and he was such a buffoon, and da 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 da. Nobody did anything like that. Nobody makes him look bad, but he himself.
He does it to himself, I think.
Mm-hmm.
They're together. They split up. She announces their split up, by the way, through Liz Smith. Liz Smith was a columnist. She was nationally syndicated, blonde from Texas, very popular.
I love Liz Smith.
Oh, she was one of a kind. I got to meet her a few times. And
really?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
And she was just amazing. Just really, really cool.
She's so smart.
The first time I went up to her with my friend at a party, I was like, oh my God, I'm a publicist. I think you're so amazing. I'd love to be in your column someday. She just looks at me and she goes, well, pitch me anytime. Just call me up, pitch me. Yeah, just, yeah, super down to earth. And my story for you, we'll get to the book in a second. In 99 or 2000, I was working the 100th anniversary, for Simon & Schuster. And all of the novelists and all of the best-selling writers, and Stedman Graham was there. Everybody was there. And my job was a little process to carry the folder, the binder, you know, and check on people and make sure everything's okay. And I overhear this conversation with these two people talking about Monica Lewinsky and Bill Clinton and what's going to happen. And I turn around and it's Carl Bernstein and Betty Friedan. Like... of all people. And I turned around and that's I said, so I have to say, this is the best conversation I've ever overheard in a long time. And they both just started talking to me like, well, what do you think? And blah, blah, but really nice. And I'm sure I just got starstruck because I didn't know what to say. But Carl Bernstein like leans over and touches my shoulder and winks at me and then he walks away. So, I mean, yeah, he's being Bernstein, but I wrote an email to my dad and told him about it the next day. He goes, if I ever see that Bernstein, I'm going to punch him in the balls.
that's how you should react as a father.
Yes.
I'm just saying.
Only in New York, kids. Yeah, it's was really wonderful. So let's get to the novel. This is her first novel. She had written some screenplays. She'd done a lot of essaying. She has this heartbreak in her life, needs to rebuild it. She gets work right away as a writer, but then she wants to be a novelist. She wants to write fiction. And she creates this character, Rachel Samstadt. She's a food writer who's married to, well, she flirts with and then marries a man named Mark Feldman. Now.
Okay, let's talk about that.
Carl Bernstein and Woodward and Bernstein, just spoiler alert, they found out who was Deep Throat, the source for the Watergate stories. And that man was Mark Felt, who was with the FBI all those years, or the CIA. I think it was the FBI. But Mark Felt is the name you need to know. And it was a big deal. Like, they had to wait until he died, basically. It was like on death's door before he would give that up.
But, well, hang on. Yeah. Hang on.
Except,
before we even get to except, because I read this really cool, I'll post it in the Facebook group. I thought it was cute and funny. I think it was meant to be cute and funny and also extremely cutting piece by Nora Ephron when his identity was revealed. And she sort of implies that was not Mark Felt's wish per se, that this was just like a proclamation that Woodward and Bernstein made, like, we're never going to reveal it until he dies. And she was like, did anybody ask Mark Felt?
Well, people thought it was Diane Sawyer.
Yes. Oh, the theories.
The theories.
The many, many theories.
Were crazy pants. And apparently she would tell you, you put a couple of drinks in her and she would turn right and go, oh, it's Mark Felt. Or she would just say the initials are MF. And then, so here's the story. It's Mark Feldman that's our protagonist. They get married. She moves to D.C. to be with him. He cheats on her. And she already has a kid. And she's pregnant. And so she goes back to New York. And she lives in her father's place she lives in New York for a little bit. He comes and gets her. Oh, and while she's in New York, I love this scene. It's such a funny aside, but she's in a group, a therapy group, which used to be, I don't know if they still do those anymore, but especially in the 70s and 80s, being in some kind of therapy group.
Oh, it was a big deal.
Oh, in the 90s. So I have friends that were in that and they would like had a hard time leaving their groups, you know, because you get
really
close. I
think they still do that. Yeah. I think that's still a thing.
A group therapy session. She's on the subway. A man sits next to her and winks at her. and she's kind of confused. And then she's like, oh, I'm wearing this diamond ring. Maybe he's a thief because I'm a pregnant. Oh, she's really hugely pregnant in the story. So she puts the ring in her bra. She takes off, puts it in her bra, and she goes to therapy. They're having this session, and then the robber comes into the session. And in the book, he puts the gun to her head and drags her out of the room and says, yeah, give me all your money, and then takes her out and then just leaves her at the elevator. And then he takes off, and then they go to the police station. After that, her husband comes back. Mark comes back and says, please come home. You know, you're pregnant. Let's try this again. She goes back to DC. Thelma Rice is the person in the book. And
that's the character, the name of the mistress in the book.
They find her ring. Her husband finds her ring, gives her ring. And the ring is a big deal. It's like super expensive. It was like, I guess you would say a push present. Like she got it after the birth of her child. As soon as she gets the jewelry back, she realizes the stone is loose. She takes it to the jeweler, and the jeweler says, oh, hey, did you like your necklace your husband bought for you? And she's like, what? And then he's like, oh, I'm sure you'll get it for Christmas or something. You know, just trying to.
It was like the audacity that he's so flagrant about. Yeah. These indiscretions, like he goes to their, like they have a jeweler, but he goes to their jeweler. He takes this person, the mistress, to their restaurants, and that, like, he's so flagrant about it. He uses their credit cards.
Yes.
To pay for things.
Everything. He doesn't even use cash. And then he, like, all their friends know about it. And then there's this whole thing where their friends' spouses cheat on with other people. There's a little bit of, like, a gay slur because it's, like, written a long time ago that's a little dated.
Yeah. One of the friends is a man whose wife leaves him for a woman.
But so it's supposed to be like, well, people cheat all the time here, kind of attitude that, you know, some people have. Mark actually scolds her when she tells Betty, who's this columnist, that Thelma, I think, has a, you know, something going on in her private area that she needs to be treated.
Infection,
which is hilarious. And then the mistress, former mistress or whatever, goes to the house and complains to Mark about the rumor. Like, she should keep her damn mouth shut, you know, fooling other people's head. But then Mark gets mad at her for doing it.
At his wife. For spreading a rumor about the mistress that he's putting in everybody's face all over town.
Exactly. Yeah. The gall.
Now, we're not telling it as funny as Nora Ephron tells it.
No. And you should, honestly, get the book. But honestly, if you like audiobooks, definitely listen to it. Because have Meryl Streep perform all of these lines and all of this and all the different accents and all the different people.
It is side-splittingly funny. It is so wonderful.
Wonderful. And they were good friends. So, you know, she's like a... She just loves the material. You could just tell, like, she puts all
of it. Yeah, she has a real handle on Nora's voice and perspective.
And in the end, she moves back to New York to start a new life. This is 1983. And Nora is so famous. She just is on all the talk shows. It's her big deal. This is her first fiction story, and it's based on her real life. And their divorce made the papers.
It was a celebrity divorce.
Yeah, People magazine.
Bernstein was such a big celebrity. You know, people thought of him as one of the men who took down the presidency.
Right.
And he was a talk show in Woodward as well. But Bernstein was always the more like... schmoozy one of the, you know, when they would go on shows together, like Woodward would be kind of more stoic and silent in the corner, and Bernstein would be the more vocal one. So they were celebrities.
They were. Woodward, actually, I'm trying to think of the name of the book that came out a couple of years ago. It was the two women from the New York Times from the Me Too movement that helped bring down Harvey Weinstein. They were on this book tour, and Bob Woodward in DC interviewed them. You think that's a real coup and there's an audience and everything. It's a book talk. And then Bob Woodward asked in almost excruciating detail, well, what did Harvey Weinstein actually do to these women? Do you think that was foreplay? Is that really so? I'm not kidding you.
Oh, God.
And then he interrupted them constantly. I mean, this was in all the it was just like, dude, what are you doing here? What are you doing?
I will say, though, he does do that, I've noticed. It's not just women. He does that with everybody.
Yeah, that's probably just a thing. But saying Harvey Weinstein was just like flirting, that's foreplay.
Pinning women to the wall.
Women were on job interviews, basically. Yeah.
Oh, gosh, I know. Just one thing I think we should know, because we keep talking about this documentary. So it's from a while ago.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Charlie Rose in this documentary.
Yeah.
Speaking of which. Yeah. I don't know. He was like a super fan girl of Nora Ephron. And so there are many, many, many interviews, lots of footage of Charlie Rose with Nora Ephron. Again, it was a different time.
Yeah.
There were things we didn't know then that we know now. FYI.
We get to the movie and Mike Nichols is friends with Nora Ephron. Nora Ephron's going to write the screenplay. And Meryl Streep is going to star in it. And originally it was going to be Mandy Patinkin that would play the role of Mark. Mandy Patinkin.
Which would also have been great.
I love Mandy Patinkin.
Have you seen those videos with him and his wife that they've been doing in quarantine?
In quarantine when they're trying to, when they're playing games with the family, or he's trying to come up with a name for a person, which is me. You know, like people have like face blindness. I have like name blindness. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have. Yeah. They're hilarious. Follow Mandy Patinkin. Very handsome and young at the time. He had just done dental. He was there for a week and could not under. He said, I can't get a handle on this character. Why would any man cheat on his wife who's pregnant? You know, Mike Nichols and Richard Mazur.
Why indeed?
And a few of the men were like, well,
decent,
yeah, men
are. Mandy Patinkin.
Right. The road to making this movie made and their divorce being finalized included Carl Bernstein wanted script approval for this film. And he says it's because in the documentary, I just want to protect my sons. And I'm like,
this was the moment I almost like threw my computer across the room. We just want to say, because the story, people know this, a lot of people know the stories about this movie that he claimed at the time and that he didn't want to, he was worried that the movie would portray him as a bad father.
Right.
Which the book does not.
No, and she never said he was.
She never said he was.
Never.
There's no, in fact, those are like the sweetest moments in the book, I would argue. Mm-hmm. The moments where it's him and the sons. I think she's extremely, if nothing else, I got the impression that she was, you know, as a mother, you don't want to badmouth the other parent. And so why would you then think the movie? And so even all these years, even after Nora is freaking gone, even when he's on a sofa with his son right in his own freaking face, there's Carl Bernstein going, well, it was so I just wanted to protect you. I was just worried about you and that you would be so upset if this, you had a movie, a big Hollywood movie that said you had a bad father. Like, not that his actions of cheating on his pregnant mother, that would create an impression that he was a bad father.
No.
But the movie is going to do that. And props to Jacob Bernstein, who can sit there with a straight face and says, well, yeah, kind of did for a while. And Carl Bernstein's like, you see?
Right. Like, and he's like, but it would have been like that
there
anyway.
You go.
It was already in the papers for years.
Yeah.
Their divorce dragged out for like 3 or 4 years. It was in People magazine. Like I just said, Liz Smith wrote about it. And they were a huge power couple and they broke up just after she gave birth to Max. What
and
else could it have been?
And he cheated on her totally publicly.
Yes.
With arguably another celebrity.
Yes.
It was not a secret.
It's not a
secret.
That
he kept under wraps for the sake of the kids.
And he put it in their divorce decree that Mike Nichols had to sign, that he had script approval and that he couldn't show the character of Mark being a bad father. So she couldn't paint him in a bad light. But then you have this problem of, well, first, okay, so let's just say this. Mandy quits, or if he gets fired, it's just not a good fit. And then Mike Nichols is good friends with Jack Nicholson. And Jack Nicholson says, if you give me $5 million, I'll do the part and I'll be ready by tomorrow. And if you can get Jack Nicholson in 85, 86, you get him. He's just a license to print money. People like Jack Nicholson.
Oh, yes. Oscars.
Yes. people show up. Nora Ephron says, oh, damn it. Now they're going to make him a friendly cad. Like, they're not going to think of him as a stinker. They're going to think of him as just kind of a rogue, which is what Jack Nicholson does very well, or did at the time. He was very conscious of his image. And
yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he was like, you know, the same age as Carl Bernstein. And so then we get this movie where, you know, you don't know why he's doing it. Is it just, it's sort of like left like, well, that's just what men do, which is not
yeah.
true.
He sort of seems like he's being forced to have this affair. And why right. doesn't she understand the pain that he's in? Why is she being so insensitive? It's real weird.
It's bizarre. And to read the reviews at the time, which I don't know why I did that to myself, but then once I went run, I had to read all the others, and it got bad reviews. It's as a movie itself, it's missing some stuff. I wish they had filmed the book she wrote.
Me too. It's not as funny.
Yeah.
It's well acted. Look, it's well acted.
Yeah.
And you can't say it's not well directed, but obviously there were some blind spots or things there are just holes in it that right. Is not the fault of anybody on the movie at all. Yeah. It's not as it's, you just don't have the humor of it. And because you don't have the humor of it, you know, there's in the book, she goes on at length, you know, she's at one point, she says that her husband would have sex with a Venetian blind.
Yes.
And she makes a lot of fun of the mistress.
Right.
Which doesn't really happen in the movie, you know, apart from the scene where she talks about the infection. In the book, from the very beginning, like literally on the first page, she starts making fun of the mistress.
Right.
And it's funny because you see that it's a defense mechanism from the, you know, you see it for what it is from the very start. She's not hiding that, but it's still very, very funny. That doesn't happen here. You know, in this movie, she's not, the mistress is never a figure of fun. She's a threat. It's weird. It's such a weird dynamic. Unrealistic.
It is unrealistic. And what they do to Meryl Streep, and this is so in some of the reviews, they say, well, this woman, she's very dowdy looking. She's pregnant in the 80s with maternity wear from the 80s. There's nothing you can wear.
There were three dresses.
There were three. You could go back.
God and help you if you were taller or shorter than that one, those three dresses.
They had big prints on them. They were like an empire waist sometimes. I mean, they were just hideous.
They were real bad. And that was all. That's all there was.
That's all you had. That was considered fashionable, by the way. Maternity dresses versus just buying bigger clothes.
Oh, those are very expensive dresses. They're like Laura Ashley maternity dresses she's wearing.
Yes.
Yeah, that's top of the line, 1983.
But a few people wrote, including Roger Ebert, like, well, she seems kind of a harpy and she seems sort of dowdy. And one reviewer wrote, she obviously loves the child more than her husband. I'm like, what? I know your face. Margot's face is like, that's where I was like, they're making excuses because the movie doesn't give you a reason. The movie doesn't give you a solid reason why Jack Nicholson. And Jack Nicholson, by the way, had a big crush on Meryl Streep. And when they were filming, she was like, he was very handsy. He wanted to make out all the time. Like he was really into the part. So this is somebody who seems like he's crazy about his wife, but he cheats on her at the most vulnerable time. Never says he's sorry. It's never in this. I watched the movie twice. Like he never once explains what he's doing. There's a scene where she confronts him and she's got all the evidence and it's what they do in the script. Like all of a sudden she's like, oh, but why did you do that? And you go back and forth when you're fighting, but
he says nothing.
He says, I don't want to talk about it. He just walks away.
Yeah.
What?
Having a shower, darling? Late.
I know about you and Thelma Rice. I know everything. It's all here.
Shit.
You didn't even have the decency to hide the evidence. You just threw it in a drawer. Hotels. Motels.
Oh, shit.
You couldn't even pay cash. like a normal philanderer, you charged everything. I mean, look at this flower. Look at all these flowers that you bought her. And you occasionally brought me home a bunch of wilted zinnias. How can you do this if I'm such a bitch? Then tell me. But if you don't do this, we have a baby, Mark. We have another baby coming. Don't you even care about them?
Of course I care.
Do you love her?
I can't do this. I can't do this right now.
And I mean, and that's a time when you could throw something at somebody when they do that. Like that's that's ridiculous.
In the book, it's a longer process. In the book, one of the things that he does is he starts like locking his office and locking his desk up, and she, you know, she can't look at her own credit card slips. And I forget there's the whole scene in the book about how she finally gets into the stuff and finds it all. But in the movie, it's all just right there. She just walks in, and because he's not hiding anything from her.
He's not. She yells at him. I clocked it. It was like a minute and a half. And he just says, I don't want to talk about it. He walks away. And then she's stuck with that. And that's what they give Meryl Streep to do. Versus, by the way, Jack Nicholson has a scene where they're the big joke is they buy this house that's completely and just needs a lot of work. The workers put a door, but they don't put a door in a proper place. Like to get to the kitchen, you have to go outside to go to the kitchen. And Jack Nicholson has a scene where he's like screaming, like, I need a wall. No one ever brings that up. He's fine. Nope. No, but she's in a vulnerable moment, gets upset. And then it's in all these reviews.
She's shrill.
She's a shrew. She's shrill. It's just really. So we'll talk about some of the people in here. We have Stocker Channing.
The cast is great. Cast is great.
Jeff Daniels, Milos Forman, who's hilarious, who's very good, the director. Stephen Hill as her father. Love.
Yeah, and that was different in the book. And again, it's sadder and funnier. Mm-hmm. In the book, both of her parents have dementia, and the mom dies, and the father, I think, has to be
he's
put
institutionalized
in a facility of some kind.
But he shows up in a jogging suit, because you can be in a jogging suit anywhere in New York and no one would stop. He seems very sweet. Yeah, he was.
It's really dear. I mean, none of that wasn't true of her own life. This is something that she did for the book. But it's a great touch in the book. It's really, again, it's really touching and sad. And you really, what I liked about it was like, you get the feeling when this happens in the book, not in the movie. Mm-hmm. It really drives home that like, this woman has nobody. Like she's successful. She's famous. And, you know, she's been on television and when like stuff gets real, she really doesn't have anybody.
Well, people,
but
her editor and her New York friends. Cause the people in DC are sort of like, well, everybody's screwing around. You know, and he's really famous, and he's really, you know, you can get a lot here. You know, he's a big fish in a small pond, let's say. We should say Catherine O'Hara as Beth. I think Catherine O'Hara, she's so beautiful and funny.
I loved the combo of her with Milos Forman.
Yes.
Like, oh, they're great.
Mamie Gummer, who's an actress now, plays Annie, the little girl. And their scenes together, I mean, just so, so sweet. Joanna Gleason, Anna Marie Horsford, Richard Mazur. I love Richard Mazur. Maureen Stapleton, Mercedes Rule. Oh my God, she's so gorgeous. And this is, speaking of creeps, Kevin Spacey. This is his first big role. He was handsome.
Yeah, he was.
He was beautiful. The film, it's just the same sort of trajectory. In the book, we should mention Erica from Southern Fried True Crime. She says she keeps a hard copy of the book and she has all the pages tabbed because she puts recipes throughout the whole book. We forgot to mention that.
There are great recipes.
Yes.
In this book.
Yeah. I've been posting a few that I've been getting from other articles, but I ordered myself a hard copy because I'm going to do that myself. So the movie comes out. It just does. There's a key lime pie. I should talk about this. At the very end of the movie, she finally gets some revenge. She makes a key lime pie for dinner. They're having this another boring dinner, and she just puts it in Jack Nicholson's face and then just very calmly says, can I have the car keys?
Which brings me back to my question. How is it possible to live with someone and not know something so fundamental?
It's possible. It is possible to... Is it possible... Well, to love someone so much or to think that you want to love them so much that you just don't even see anything. You know, you decide to love him and you decide to trust him and you're in the marriage and you're in the day-to-dayness of the marriage and you sort of notice that things are not the way they were, but it's a distant bell. And then when things do turn out to have been wrong, it's not that you knew all along. It was just that you were somewhere else.
I mean, you'd have to be living in a dream.
Yes. Yes. So.
And then the dream dogs.
And the dream breaks into a million tiny little pieces, which leaves you with a choice. You can either stick with it, which is unbearable, or you can just go off and dream another dream. Can I have the car keys, please? By the way, I won't be able to come to the party with Thelma.
Yeah, and that's the end of their marriage. In the book, and what I love in the book, so that this scene is in the book as well, but she's, what's cracked me up in the book was that she's, her regret is that it wasn't a blueberry pie.
Yes, she should have done blueberry pie because it would stain
everything.
Because
he was wearing a blazer. He's wearing a blazer that he'd bought with his mistress.
The girlfriend bought from, yes. There's lots of little touches like that. I love in the-
So funny.
In the book, she actually really goes into- how sad she is. Like, how come you don't love me anymore? How could we fix this? What can we do? Is there something we can do? You know, but he's not interested in that. And there's also
no. And we should say also in the book, he says he's in love with his mistress, which is very different, which never happens in the movie. He's out now. He says, I think even more than once, and that's why he's not giving her up, that he's in love with her, the mistress. She talks about that, like, you know, how blindsided she felt and how blindsided and not blindsided, because, you know, she kind of knew
he had a reputation
a little bit what he was like. And I mean, it's much sadder. It's much more honest. The character in the movie is delusional.
Yeah,
she is. The character in the book is seeing how she's been delusional. It's much more self-aware.
Yeah.
And therefore funnier.
I like the part where she said that her energy level is always super high and that everywhere she goes, people tell her to relax. Like at the doctors, the dentists, that's my life. Do you understand? I go through my whole life. Everybody tells me, are you okay? Can you just calm down a little bit? I guess I felt very heard and very seen when I got to that.
And I think we have our very first literary reference to resting bitch face. Because that's what she says in the character in the book. That's what she says she has. She did. I mean, that's exactly what she describes.
Yeah.
So that she therefore feels compelled to smile like a lunatic all the time.
So people aren't afraid of her. The movie comes out in July of 86. Like, this is not a summer movie. I don't get that thinking at all. It just does okay. It doesn't do supremely well. And then Nora Ephron is like, that's all right. I've got a million ideas for movies and I'm just going to do that from now on in books. And just a few. Silkwood, she did When Harry Met Sally. And you could hear some of just the stuff that. She says here. There's some stuff in the book that shows up in When Harry Met Sally. I think the fake orgasms. Sleepless in Seattle. You've got Mail. Julie and Julia, like we talked about. She's amazing. She's won Drama Critic Awards and BAFTAs and Academy Awards. And she was just freaking amazing.
I just love her essays. And, you know, the little kind of observational you know, like the thing she wrote for the Huffington Post about Deep Throat and those kinds of, I mean, I love all those things, but the essays and the articles and all that, I particularly, I mean, again, she was so good with words.
Good evening. In our last episode, Rachel discovered that her husband, Mark, is in love with another woman, the tall, infamous Thelma, and she has left him, taken their tiny, tiny child, and gone to her father's apartment in New York. There, pregnant, penniless, and alone, she has been waiting, hoping against hope, as the hours tick by without a phone call. Finally, realizing that if there is no phone call the first day, there probably won't be one, or perhaps there will be one, but a day later, Rachel closes her weary eyes and sobs herself to sleep.
You were just saying, so I think what it was from, Margot, the documentary, because it opens with her, she's talking to Dick Cavett, and it's like early 70s, and she's like black cocktail dress and like just so adorable.
It's so cute. Yeah, she wants to marry Mike Nichols, she says.
Well, they worked together and he completely adored her. I've been reading his book. He talks about like when they tried to film this movie, the problem that it was like with Mandy Patinkin, that Carl Bernstein told him that he needed to sign on his divorce decree in order for them to film the
Who
movie.
Does that?
Who does that? A control freak. Someone who's a control freak.
Imagine like, okay, let's say you're you work at a Starbucks. And you're going through a divorce and your husband's like, okay, I'm going to need your shift manager to co-sign on the divorce.
It reminds me of Dixie Chicks. Natalie Maines got divorced and her husband was like, you can't write songs that refer to our relationship. Like, what is she supposed to do? She's a songwriter. She has leukemia at the end. She has a blood disease.
It's a blood disease. It's not very clear anywhere. She was extremely private about it.
Yeah.
Even super close people to her did not know.
Mike Nichols didn't know. There's other people that didn't know. There's in the documentary, they talk about this friend who they had lunch together and at the end they split a cheesecake, which never happened. And then she said, can you please walk with me home? And it was only like 3 blocks. And then Nora went to the hospital like later that week. I mean, she kept things very, everything was copy except for that. That was just one thing she wasn't going to write about. She passes away. She's 71 years old in 2012. It's going to be 10 years, and it's too bad. She's got such this great amount of work, though, that you can appreciate. She wrote about aging. She wrote about, like, she didn't like her neck. That was a whole, you know,
thing. Oh, that was a huge hit.
Huge. Book
at the end of her life, you know. Which nobody was talking about. I mean, all these things that she talked about, again, we're talking about everything is copy, but, you know, she really discussed things that nobody talks about. Pregnancy, infidelity, divorce. I mean, just in this book alone, it's like really groundbreaking. But then, later on, like as she's going through the phases of her life and writing about it with such honesty. And like, I really liked how everybody in the documentary talks about like, her brutal honesty.
Yes.
And she's also brutally honest with herself.
Yeah.
It seems.
My favorite story was Sleepless in Seattle. Tom Hanks tells it that they originally hired another actor to play his son. And he just did a couple of scenes and it just wasn't working. So Nora fired him. And Tom Hanks is like, you fired a kid? And she's like, well, it wasn't working.
He's got to go.
Yeah. She has no time for that. Like they all said they went to her for advice. They went to her to get her second. Like, is this a funny joke? Should we do this? Should we do that? And she would always give a brutally honest answer. But I think that to her, that's respect. She's showing you respect by doing that. Like, she's just going to tell you what it is and tell you how it is. She's brilliant, 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 brilliant. And I think, you know, of all things, book versus movie, I'm going to say it's the audio book. I mean, but the book.
Oh, definitely.
The book.
But the print book, which I also have.
Yeah.
get it because you're going to want those recipes.
Yeah.
And it's great. I mean, you will love it. But that audiobook is outstanding.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking, like, you know, getting back to her kind of brutal honesty, you know, in the book, because, again, the character in the book has to face a lot of hard truths. You know, her husband is a squid. He is terrible. He's awful. And she made a super bad choice.
Right.
You know, and she has to take accountability. She has to take accountability for herself, too, for getting herself into that relationship and how she's dealing with it. And because she does that, by the end of the book, you know, she is empowered and you feel like, yeah, she's going to be okay. Whereas in the movie, because we don't ever have those moments where she's like, oh my gosh, I married a total jerk. What did I do? Why did I make this decision? You never get any insight into that at all. And so when she's, you know, getting on the plane with her two kids at the end, you're like, is she going to be okay? Like, is she going to turn right back around the next time he shows up? And is Jack Nicholson, you know, yeah, like, come on home. And she's like, okay. You don't get any of that. And so you just, it's, yeah, you just feel very unsatisfied at the end of that movie. I'm sorry to say, but yeah, audiobook.
Well, yeah, it's the book. We should say some people in our Facebook group say that they really like this movie, or one woman, it was really interesting. She was she was raised by a single mom, and the mom took the kids, and she said they were, you know, her mom was just crying because she could really relate to it. You know, some people have a real, it helped them understand divorce or understand people splitting up.
It was unusual. We didn't discuss that at all, but yeah, that was an unusual topic. I mean, it was not only a groundbreaking topic in print, it was definitely a groundbreaking topic. So yes, that they even dealt with it at all the way that they did was kind of huge.
What was the movie Meryl Streep did with Dustin Hoffman? Kramer versus Kramer. Yeah, that was the one before that. I never realized, and I didn't see the movie till a few years ago, that Meryl Streep's character is actually having a mental nervous breakdown, and that's why she's leaving. Like, it's in all the material, they make it seem like it's just a lark. You know, she's just going to not be a mom for a while. And it turns out, like, no, she was really super struggling. And it's,
yeah.
Yeah. And it is a struggle. It's very hard. You know, it's to be.
It's not easy.
It's not easy to be a mother and of young, young kids. And
in those days, there were really no tools available.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah, there's no mommy group you can go on on Facebook and, you know, hey, I feel like this today. Is that normal? You know?
Yeah. Even if you were affluent and, you know, white and had everything, you know, at your fingertips, you didn't have that.
Yeah.
You didn't have that support, you know.
Especially in D.C. when everybody knew about the affair, nobody seemed to care. You know, they didn't care enough to warn her or care enough to... I don't know. They just kind of took his side, I guess. He's Carl Bernstein.
Yeah. And it's, again, in the, they do this a little bit in the movie that you get the sense of how that set, that DC set, has normalized this. Like, this is just what you do. This person sleeps with that person, and we're at a dinner party, and my husband slept with that lady and that lady at the table. And, you know, we just kind of laugh and talk about economics.
Mm-hmm. And that's not what she was into. That's not what
I know.
No. And she
can't imagine why.
Can't imagine. Yeah. It sounds thrilling to be at some of those dinner parties. Nora Ephron, by the way, we should say, married Nicholas Pileggi, who wrote Wise Guy, who that became Goodfellas. Is that what became
Goodfellas?
Goodfellas.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great marriage. They
long,
each other.
Great marriage. Yeah. Yes.
And he wasn't in the documentary because it's still too soon for him. He just completely misses her. But they were a really good match. And she did find that love that she was seeking. Someone who treated her like an equal and appreciated her.
Yeah, wasn't threatened by her.
Right.
Yeah, it sounds wonderful. And, you know, and it's so nice to see, again, the people who care about her talk about that. It was it's such a great documentary. It's so fun to learn about this woman. And I just loved, like, hearing people's takes on Nora Ephron, who, you know, knew her in all these different arenas and at all these different points in her life. And to kind of, what you're hearing is that they're all dealing with the same person, the same woman, mm-hmm. you know, no matter when or how. Is she pregnant? Is she living in DC? Is she, you know, whatever's going on? Is she in Hollywood, you know, making a multi-zillion dollar movie? It's always, this, she's always herself, which yeah. is really great. So yeah, I agree. Audiobook,
but I'm going to get that. I'm going to get a copy for myself so I can keep that in my library.
That's such a great idea. Okay, what are we doing next?
Well, just this week, I will show you. I got The Parent Trap, which is on paperback. It's not on Kindle or audio. And also I got Sabrina Fair, which is the movie Sabrina, the play.
I'd like to do Parent Trap, but it's going to take me a day or two to get the book in my hands. Maybe let's just wait on that, but I will order it.
I'm always going to push.
Sabrina. Is Sabrina the one where she's the limo driver's daughter?
Yeah.
Yeah, with Humphrey Bogart.
Yep, and Audrey Hepburn. Okay. And that one you have to order as well. Dangerous Liaisons, that's not too long. And that movie, that's pretty available everywhere.
That might be fun. I love I don't know if we've talked about this, my favorite movie star of all time is Jean Moreau, who was in the French version in the 60s, which was set in the 60s. It's really cool. Yeah, that might be fun.
I think that would be different. Okay, cool. So we'll do that.
Cool. All right, let's do that.
Everybody, thank you so much for listening. Please follow us on all the things. Please feel free to send us your suggestions. Margot, where can they find you?
You can find me online at coloniabook.com, and all of my social media callouts are at She's Nacho Mama. And where can they find you?
You can find me at Brooklyn Fit Chick, mostly for Twitter and Instagram. And my site is brooklynfitchick.com. We will be back soon with a new episode. Thank you so much for listening to the Book vs. Movie podcast. We are a part of the Frolic Podcast Network. You can find more podcasts you will love at frolic.media/podcasts. We follow the hashtags Lady Pod Squad and Podern Family. If you want to support the show, you can go to our Patreon page, go to PATREON, and look for Book vs. Movie podcast. We have a basic Facebook page, but we also have a private Facebook group. Go to Facebook and type in Book vs. Movie Podcast Group if you want to join that. You can follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Book vs. Movie. Spell all those words out. If you'd like to send us an email, it's bookversusmoviepodcast, spelled it all out, at gmail.com. We do have a promotion with Audible. If you want to check out their service for free for 30 days, go to audibletrial.com/bookversusmovie. You can follow Margot D. at Brooklyn Fit Chick on social media, and Margot P. at She's Nacho Mama. Thanks so much again for checking out our show, and we'll be back soon with a new episode.